Welcome to the Student Hour, amplifying student voices from the city of Portland and beyond. The Student Hour is produced by KBPS Broadcasting Students at Benson Tech, featuring student stories, conversations, interviews, news, and fun. Brought to you by our partners and affiliate stations. Thank you. This is the Student Hour.
Breakfast. It's always the most important meal of the day. A good day always starts with a perfect breakfast. A perfect breakfast always starts with some excellent eggs. I'm Joseph, and this is how to make the best eggs. First thing to start off with is grab a hard bowl. Shouldn't be that hard to find. You probably could find it somewhere around the house. Step number two, grab 4 eggs. Or do as many as you want. But personally, just for me, I like having 4 eggs. Of course, eggs make the eggs. Excellent. Alright, by now you should have the 4 eggs. Or the amount of eggs you chose. So what you're going to want to do with the eggs is crack them on the side of the bowl. Then put the yolk in. Congratulations on making it to step number 4. Grab a whisk, a fork, or whatever you can stir with. Also, don't forget to compost the eggshells. We are eggo-friendly. Anyways, for step 5, grab a pan. Make sure you don't grab a pot though. That mistake might make you feel a little bit scrambled. For step number 6, find a stick of butter and find a butter knife. Cut around 1/8 of it into the pan. Or estimate how much you really need. Just don't use too much or that'd be wasteful. Step number 7, for a bonus, I recommend adding a splash of milk to the eggs. Don't do this if you're lactose intolerant though. If you are, just use some lactose-free milk. Simple as that. Step number 8, turn on the heat. Grab the pan with the butter in it and put it on the stove. Turn the heat up to a medium low, or if you're in a hurry, just turn it up to medium. Don't forget to move the butter around with a fork or spatula. Wouldn't want the eggs to get stuck to the pan, right? Step number 9, now that the butter's melted, pour the eggs in. Now this part is really important, don't stop mixing the eggs in the pan. If you do, you could possibly make an omelet. Now that you're stirring the eggs around in the pan, let me go tell some egg jokes. How could you drop an egg 6 feet without breaking it? By dropping it 7 feet, it won't break for the first 6. What kind of eggs do confused chickens lay? Scrambled eggs. Where do chickens like to go on vacation? In Santiago. Where do chickens like to pay for their groceries? In the Express line. Where did the chicken have the most feathers? On the outside. Alright, I'm all out of egg jokes. I recommend waiting till the eggs are still a bit gooey, but still somewhat solid. Then turn off the heat and continue moving the eggs around until you feel it's done. Then put it on a plate, and that's how you make excellent eggs.
You're listening to the Student Hour, empowering the stories, conversations, and news from students in Portland and beyond.
Making cereal every morning is boring. Make some delicious breakfast sliders to start your morning. This is London and Divine introducing how to make the best delicious sliders.
A reason to eat in the morning is because breakfast gives your body energy to start the day off, and it helps you focus better in school or work. Why not start the day off with some delicious breakfast sliders instead of some boring cereal? The ingredients to make the best delicious breakfast sliders are the base, which could be Hawaiian rolls, mini biscuits, anything that you would like as a bread. The protein, egg, scrambled or baked, bacon, sausage, ham, whatever type of meat that you like. Cheese, cheddar, American, or pepper jack, doesn't matter. The extra is optional, like tomatoes, avocado, potatoes, and the finishing touch, butter, honey, and a glaze on top. And then you would need a pan, spatula. First, you get your bacon. You put it in a pan, how many ever slices that you want. While that's cooking, you can get another pan and put your breakfast sausage on it. And then wait for that to cook until your liking. After that, you can take them out the pan and put them on a plate with a napkin on it. While them are sitting there, you can get your eggs out, either scrambled with cheese, whatever, however you like it. Put them on a pan, scramble them up, put some seasoning, cheese. While that's going, wash your potatoes, cut your potatoes up, put them on another pan with a little bit of oil, wait for them to sizzle, and then put the top on and let that wait for 10 to 15 minutes. By that time, your eggs should be done cooking. You want to take them out and put them on a plate with no napkin. And then go back to your potatoes, get a fork, and like poke through it and make sure it's soft.
After you make all your ingredients, you're going to preheat the oven to 350, and you're going to grab your Hawaiian rolls or biscuits, whatever you prefer. And then you are going to grab some butter, and you're going to cut the bread in half until you have two pieces, and then you're going to put the butter on the bottom, and then you're going to grab your ingredients and put it all however you would like on it. And then you're going to put the bread on top, and then put some butter on top of the bread so then it can melt in the oven. And you're going to put it in the oven.
Here are some fun facts about breakfast sliders. They can be made ahead of time and reheated, making them perfect for a busy morning. They're kid-friendly since they're so small and easy to handle than regular breakfast sandwiches.
Which protein would you prefer in a breakfast slider?
I like beef, I think.
Okay.
Beef.
Okay. What comes to mind when you hear the term breakfast sliders?
A sausage McMuffin.
Okay. What kind of ingredients do you expect in a breakfast slider?
Like pepper, eggs, a sausage or something.
Okay. Like okay. How many sliders do you think make a good serving size for breakfast?
It depends how big they are. Probably like, if you're really like on a bulk, probably like 6 or 7.
And if you could invent your own breakfast slider, what ingredients, like be creative with it, you know?
I'm really getting creative here, like chicken, because that's like the same, that's from the same family, so it's like the same thing. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is the end of our segment for the student hour. And again, this is London and Devon. Have a nice day.
Thanks for listening to the Student Hour, student radio for the city of Portland and beyond. Everyone knows that Portland is a haven of fun and unique foods. But not all that food is accessible to everyone, especially if you can only have halal food. Hi, my name is Zara, and you're listening to the Student Hour. This hour's theme is about cooking, so I decided to do one about the best halal restaurants and best places to find halal food in the Portland area. If you don't know what halal means, it's basically what's permissible for Muslims to eat. Or if you want to get really fancy about it, the Oxford Dictionary says that it's, quote, denoting or relating to food that conforms to Islamic dietary laws. Which is a lot of words that don't make a whole lot of sense, but it's just basically what's permissible for Muslims to eat. I'm Muslim myself, and finding good food around Portland has always been a huge challenge, because it's either having your 20th vegetarian burger that drives you a little crazy after you realize the meat is not meat and just tastes like plants, or it's having the same kebab at least 20 times until you finally reach the brink of insanity. So, it's always nice to have other options. One of those options that I've always been a fan of is Dave's Hot Chicken. It's a pretty popular restaurant, and if you've been there, there's a good chance that you can't even tell they serve halal food, because halal food doesn't have that much of a difference. Well, except most of the time it does have better quality, but that's just the fact that the restaurant is amazing. Anyways, I've always loved getting their fried chicken, their sliders are super tender and crunchy in all the right places. It's great, I totally recommend it, and I definitely do not have an addiction to their sauce. Totally not. That would be crazy. I definitely do not just drink this straight from the packet. I mean, what? Another one of my personal favorites is a store, or really a food truck, called Persian Kebab by PSU. Try and guess what they sell. If you guess kebab, you must be some sort of genius, because that is what they do sell. They have kebab rolls, and they are majestic, and I love them so much. They are like a little slice of heaven, or roll of heaven, I guess. Their kebabs are always tender and juicy and super flavorful. They have this like smoky taste that you can rarely get anywhere else. And their meat is so, so good. Another one of my personal favorite restaurants is Naan & Curry. They're located right in the St. John's area, which is where I live. And they're located by Sandy. They have two locations and they definitely deserve it because every time I go, it's joy. And if you couldn't tell by the title, they sell naan and curry. The world gets crazier each day, I know. And their food is always amazing. I love it. Their curries fill me with so much joy. Their chicken is amazing. I would definitely recommend you stop by when you get the chance. Another great restaurant in the area is Mexicana. Their Mexican-Pakistani fusion restaurant, which, by the sound of it, doesn't necessarily sound that great, but I promise. Their tacos are heavenly, their bun kebabs, which is like a burger but with a kebab, are amazing, and every part of them brings me so much joy. And also, they're a food truck. They move around a lot, so if you see it near you, definitely go check it out. I love them. Also, fun fact, Khana means food in Urdu, which is why they're called Mexicana, because it's Pakistani-Mexican fusion. Whoa. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to me rant about halal food for 4 minutes. This has been The Student Hour. My name is Zara. Thanks for listening. Please support The Student Hour and our affiliates. Visit their websites, sign up to volunteer, donate, and spread the word about The Student Hour. Thanks!
Fruits. Apples, bananas, and even the humble kiwi. Tasty, filling snacks that are beloved by many. But which one is the most beloved? Or should be the most beloved? My name's Simeon, and I'm here to answer that burning question. What's the best fruit is one part of the larger food-themed Student Hour, the radio show consisting of themed student segments. It's important to know the best choices for fruit. It's an incredibly good source of vitamins. It can be a good source of water. It can be a good source of protein. It's an essential part of your diet. And it is incredibly important to know which fruits should be in your diet. The most popular fruit in the world is bananas, a tropical delicacy that has infected the world with its yellow sweetness. Unlike fruits like apples or plums, their skin is bitter and typically peeled back before eating the sweet inner flesh. While this is a common feature of fruits, some may dislike the inconvenient nature of the inedible skin. They're also often not ripe enough, or when they do get too ripe, they become bruised and discolored brown. They are also nutrient dense and a good source of protein. Many people opting to put them into things like protein shakes or smoothies. Really, how could I talk about fruits without talking about the apple? Everyone knows it. Eat an apple a day keeps the doctor away. With their red appearance and their crispy texture, what's not to love? These are the second most popular fruit in the US. I'm not sure about the world, but that is for good reason. Apples are one fruit with many different breeds and varieties that are popular, such as Honeycrisp, Fiji, and Pink Ladies. My personal favorite fruit, mandarin oranges. Mandarin oranges are sweet, they are fun to eat. Like bananas, you have to peel back the bitter outer layer, and you also have to peel apart the smaller inner chunks and segments of the mandarin. But I don't mind this. I find it kind of fun. They don't always taste the best. They can be quite sour depending on the season, but when they're good, I can eat as many as I need to of them. Watermelon is another fruit that people love. It's hydrating and sweet. It's pretty fun to cut. It's easy to eat. It's light. It's lovable fruit. You can get it without seeds. Many people find the seeds in watermelon annoying, but personally, they don't bother me. They're fine. Peaches are an enjoyable delicacy. There's songs about peaches, specifically canned peaches. Shout out to the Presidents of the United States of America. Love that band. They're sweet, tasty. They're good for you. Bit less good for you when they're from a can, but they are still quite enjoyable. From a can, they can be quite slimy, but there's many different ways to eat peaches. And they're another popular flavor for things like smoothies and drinks. They're often put into drinks. They're a good supplement for many things. Now, you'll notice I mentioned canned peaches. There's a lot of different ways to eat fruit, and that also includes canned fruits and dried fruits. And it's important to remember that always the best way to eat fruits is to eat them fresh, eat them organic, eat them that way. That's how to get the most nutrients. It's the healthiest way. And typically, it's the best tasting. There's also fruit flavorings. Fruit flavorings don't have the same nutrients that fruits often do. And honestly, a lot of the time, they don't even taste like the original fruit. This can be a problem for some people. And while it's good to have some of these things as treats and to enjoy, it's never bad to have something you enjoy in moderation. These things should not replace actual organic fruits. When it comes to deciding which fruit is best, the most important takeaway is that fruit is good for you. So really, the best fruit is whichever fruit you like the most and will eat more of. It doesn't matter what other people like. It matters what is most important to you and keeping you eating these delicious delicacies. My name is Simeon, and this is my segment, Which is the Best Fruit? Thank you for listening to me and the Student Hour.
You make the Student Hour possible. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners in our program.
Have you ever been stuck in a cycle of your choices for consumption? Do you crave a crispy and a juicy with tenderness? Today's theme of the show is chicken-related topics, and thank you so much for tuning in into the Student Hour show. So for today's topic is chicken. I know you guys were thinking, oh, I don't know, why don't you choose beef? Why don't you choose bees? Why don't you choose cheese? And my response to that, there is no problem with some nice grilled or fried chicken that has really good quality, right? And you take a bite, it's extremely tender, it has the juiciness. It may even have the crispiness on the outside if you do it right on the cooking, you know? You have a lot of options. You have chicken sandwiches, if you love bread. I really love chicken sandwiches a lot. I think they would go really good. The sauce, you know, the lettuce, maybe the tomato, depending on what place you really go to. And all in all, it's really good quality. I think it is. Because you can make it homemade, or you could go out to eat if you're feeling a little fancy. But of course, it's just some chicken, you know? It's very good. Has some nutrients. If you need to bulk up on some protein, me personally, I recommend chicken breast. It's a high, valuable source of protein. It's very good for you, and it's highly recommended. There's nothing wrong with eating chicken almost every day. It's very healthy for you. As long as you get them from the right sources, there should be absolute no problem whatsoever. That's where we're going to fly to chicken drumsticks, right? Chicken drumsticks is one of my favorite types of chicken. It's because it has the little bone that you could easily just grab and you could eat right off the bone. It makes super satisfying, super delicious. You get the greasy feeling on your fingers, which is totally acceptable. And, you know, I have a little recipe because I did a little cooking on the chicken, right? So you gotta grab the chicken drumstick, right? But you gotta pull it. You gotta pull it down. Like, massage it a little bit and put some baking powder. Now, the baking powder is going to add more oxygen, which really helps, like, bubble up and open. So, it's really going to help with the crispiness. And then you pop it in the oven, 350, around 13 minutes, boom, it's amazing. Top quality. It tastes very good. There's nothing wrong with it. You could add paprika. You could add pepper. You could add salt. You could add anything you really desire, because the variety for the chicken is so bizarre and diverse. It's almost nearly impossible to cover it all. Chicken masala, which is a traditional around like India and Muslim countries, it's very good. I really enjoy it. They put such nicest curry sauces I have ever tasted. It is absolute phenomenal. I completely recommend that you should eat or make the homemade chicken masala. It's very good. Also, let's get into the topic of chicken wings. Chicken wings are very good, you know. They're very popular for sports and football. I understand all of this. I've been watching some TV recently. You know, the Wingstop does the promotions from the football. It just has a very nice combination and blends of sauces that it just goes along very well. It's not your typical just, oh, pop it in the oven, put a little salt and pepper, you know, 350, maybe like 20 minutes. That's not how it works. It's amazing. You got to cover and drench it in these sauces. And you could choose honey. You could choose paprika. You could choose ranch if you like it. You could choose chili flakes. That goes with the chicken wings. Mainly because we got creative and we decided, hey, let's make it. We'll throw these sauces. We throw it on. We put some different seasonings we've never done. It's all part of making the chicken taste good and have good quality, right? So that's the part. Now, the chicken, it's just a very good meat, and I think it's a very high quality, and it's definitely a very soluble, very tender, and very acceptable meat for cooking, and I think in also most of religions or traditions. But that will vary. But once again, my name is Kane, and today's chicken feed was a complete success. Thank you for listening to the Student Hour. Kane is signing off.
You're listening to the Student Hour, empowering the stories, conversations, and news from students in Portland and beyond.
Hello, my name is Nixie.
And my name's Avery.
This is our Student Hour segment, all about salt. Salt is salty. It adds to your diet and to the flavor of your foods.
Yeah, I know that. Say, quick question. Do you know where it comes from?
It's mainly imported from China, collected from shoreline pools, man-made ponds, and from ancient wells. Letting salt water evaporate is how most table salt is harvested. They let the water separate itself from the salt, and it eventually gets enough to sell to your local establishments. I'm pretty confident there's another type of salt out there. Of course, there's flavors and colors, but what other textures are there?
Isn't like there a type of salt that's flakier?
Oh, yeah. Some salt is harvested from the top of those ponds, and with how differently the layers evaporate, some of it's flakier. That type of salt is harder to get. It's more delicate, and they have to be more careful while gathering it. That being said, labor costs come into play, raising the price of that salt.
Hmm. That's pretty interesting, but why is it so important? I mean, it's just salt.
Salt gives you sodium, and sodium is important for your muscles. Not having enough can lead to tension in your muscles, making it easier to pull a muscle. Salt isn't just a nutrient, though. It flavors your food, giving your meals more dimension. It also used to be used as a preservative, brining or drying out your foods.
Huh. Who'd have thought those tiny little salt specks would taste so good and help our bodies?
My name is Nixie.
And I'm Avery.
This was our Student Hour segment, all about salt.
Thanks for listening to the Student Hour, student radio for the city of Portland and beyond.
Hey, it's Martin from KBPS. In today's broadcast, I will be talking about popcorn. Popcorn is very tasty. You can use seasoning like butter or oil. There are also different types of popcorn like microwave, stove popcorn, or kettle. Popcorn originated from the Americas, and the oldest kernels were found in Peru and Mexico as early as 3600 BCE. Graduate students discovered ears of popcorn corn from 3600 BCE in a rock shelter called Bat Cave in west central New Mexico in Catron County. There's also a specific corn for popcorn that was grown in Nebraska and Indiana, sometimes Oklahoma. There's a difference between white popcorn and yellow popcorn. White popcorn is used smaller white flakes, while yellow popcorn is bigger, sturdier flakes with a yellow tint. White popcorn has a sweet flavor and is used for seasonings, while yellow popcorn is more salty and is used in classic movie theaters. Some popcorn is also used in popcorn maker, microwave, or pan. There's a mushroom flake and a butterfly flake of popcorn when popped. Mushroom flakes are used in packaged popcorn, while butterfly flakes are more commonly used. Popcorn is also popular in movies and sports events, but it's also different depending on a country, such as North, South Korea, or South Korea, which is known as Gangnam-ji. Some people like their popcorn salty or sweet. Americans also used popcorn for breakfast in the 1800s. Popcorn should not be used to serve children under the age of 4 because of the risk of choking. There's also Jiffy Pop, which is one of the brands that sell popcorn in pre-packaged pans. Jiffy Pop was first made in 1958 and then marketed in 1959. Many American Home Products bought Jiffy Pop in the same year. After it was perfected, it reached the national U.S. market in 1976. Jiffy Pop was also based on a similar product 5 years before called Easy Pop. In the 1960s, the person who made Easy Pop sued the person who made Jiffy Pop. Jiffy Pop has also run television commercials dating at least back to the 1960s. Sometimes they give 2 children Jiffy Pop to eat, and the slogan is repeated multiple times. This is Martin from KBPS, and I have talked about popcorn for this student hour.
Please support the Student Hour and our affiliates. Visit their websites, sign up to volunteer, donate, and spread the word about the Student Hour. Thanks!
Hello there, my name is Ichiro Evanstar, and welcome to the next segment of the Student Hour. As we all know, the Portland area is absolutely covered in so many unique and irresistible restaurant options. In fact, Portland is probably one of the best cities for unique food you can be in, and is something to be proud of. So today, I will be talking about the most wacky, delicious, and some of my personal favorites, depending on the area you live in the Rose City. We will be going from area to area in Portland, most populated areas, in my opinion, and I will be giving 3 or 4 of my favorite restaurants in that area. To be talking about North Portland, Northeast Portland, Southeast Portland, and Southwest Portland. We are going to start off with the place I grew up in, North Portland. Number one for breakfast options in St. John's. So there is this little food cart called The Two of Us in St. John's, and they have the best breakfast sandwiches and comfort food in North Portland, in my opinion. They have amazing coffee and a lot of other things like baked goods and great things. The owner is so kind. She's such a great lady. Give them some love, their little food cart. Next, I will be talking about Posies in Kenton. There are tons of baked goods, and it is right next to the library, so it's really good for going to the library. It's early in the morning, you're like, might as well get some baked goods, get some coffee. Very cozy atmosphere, and it can be a little packed sometimes, but I think it's worth it, in my opinion. For lunch in North Portland, I suggest Signal in St. John's. It has a New York City-style pizza. They have unique specials that come out, I don't know the exact number, like once a week about. The building is really cool. It's a old school gas station that it kind of reminds you of something straight out of a movie. It's honestly really cool. For the last place in North Portland, King Burrito. King Burrito is in Kenton, just on Lombard. They have these giant burritos. They're so good, such good burritos. These giant burritos and tons of other Mexican food options. Delicious flavors. Great for dinner. It's very filling. Next on the list, we will be talking about Northeast Portland. This first one I really like. Jack's Chicken in Alberta. So it's not actually called Jack's Chicken. It's called Alberta Market. But inside there is the workers there. They sell chicken, JoJo's, and they give you some ranch cups too. The chicken is, in my opinion, the best chicken in Portland. I don't know if they want to open a real location at any point, but they sell chicken. You can get a drink there too. It's a great place. If you're in Alberta, check it out. Next in Northeast Portland is Little Big Burger in Alberta. They sell these mini, cute, little delicious burgers. They have tons of different options. It isn't super greasy, so if you're looking for something a little bit less, you know, filling and like, it won't make you feel like lethargic or anything. It's really good. And they have some really, really, really good fries. They give you a big bag of these delicious, salty fries. Little Big Burger. And Sushi Ohana. It is in the Lloyd area. It's like right behind Lloyd. It's kind of by Burnside a little bit. It's a sushi conveyor place with tons of options. There's so many sushi things there. Next is Southeast Portland. And we're going to start off with Kashiwagi Sushi. It is in the Hosford area. They have super fair prices, good rated sushi, and it's great for lunch. If you're in the Hosford area, I'd swing by there. For breakfast in Southeast Portland, I would go to Space Monkey Coffee. It is in the Mount Scott area. There are tons of reviews, and they're all great reviews, and the restaurant has one of the most cozy atmospheres I've ever seen. Coffee and baked goods, and there's some breakfast sandwiches. They're all delicious. Right next to Mount Scott Park, great for the morning. Last spot for the Southeast Portland area, I will be referring you to Coqueen in the Mount Tabor area. It is right next to Mount Tabor Park, just straight behind it. It's very cool area. I love that park. This place is a breakfast-themed restaurant. There are 5 courses, and the reviews are fantastic. And for our last area on this list, we will be talking about Southwest Portland. So just downtown Pearl District area. First, we will be talking about Fogo de Chao, which is in downtown right by Pioneer. They serve Brazilian food. The atmosphere is so cool. It's so welcoming, so social. They have great reviews, amazing service, and is right in the heart of downtown. And another personal favorite of mine, I will be talking about Coco Donuts in Uptown Portland. You can get donuts, coffee. The donuts are all very fresh, very delicious. Great way to start your morning. It's by a lot of work areas. So if you go to work in the Lincoln Thorne Stadium area, I suggest you check it out. Well, that's all, folks. I hope I could give you some good suggestions for your next meal, whether it be breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Go give some of these spots some love and tell them that KBPS sent you. This was Ichiro Evanstar. Thank you for listening. On to the next segment.
You make the Student Hour possible. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners in our program.
Top 5 Foods. I'm CJ, and this segment of the Student Hour is food and cooking. So I'm going to talk about my top 5 foods that I love. But before I do, I looked up the top 5 foods on the internet, but couldn't find the top 5 foods. But I did find the top 50, so I narrowed it down to the top 5. Number 1 is hamburgers. Number 2 is hot dogs. Number 3 is pizza. Number 4 is french fries. And last but not least, number 5 is fried chicken. If I was to give this a grade, it would probably be like a B+. Now this is my top 5 foods. Number 1 is pizza, because there is so many different types of pizzas like pepperoni, supreme, chicken, etc. There are just hundreds of types of pizzas out there. That is why this is my favorite of all 5. Number 2 is tacos, because again, there is a lot of varieties to put on tacos. I like carne asada tacos most because it's just very flavorful. Also, like homemade tacos, making tacos at home is just so good because you could add whatever you want to it. Number 3 is burgers, because there are so many different types of burgers. And also, who can't go wrong with a good burger, am I right? Number 4 is subs, because there are so many different types of subs. My favorite is from Subway, and I always get the same thing every single time. Number 5 is wings. My opinion is boneless buffalo wings, but I love all types of wings. This list is making me think that I love foods that are customizable. So yeah, I'm going to be interviewing Jude Alexander next. I'm here with Jude Alexander, and I'm going to interview him with his top favorite foods. What's your number one?
My number one would probably be a tofu taco recipe that runs in the family a bit. It originated in the country fair in Eugene, and my mom's been cooking it forever. It's amazing.
Nice. What's your number two?
My number two would be another one of my mom's recipes, a very awesome corn, bacon, and spinach quiche.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it is. It's fantastic.
What is your number three?
My number three would probably be some sort of fried chicken. Not fast food fried chicken, though, but like restaurant fried chicken.
What's your number four?
My number four would probably be sushi. There's a really good sushi place on Alberta, Bamboo Sushi. Phenomenal sushi. They also have good chicken karage, which is fried chicken.
Nice. What is your number five?
My number five favorite food would probably be... My number five would probably be cod, fish, and chips. There's a really good fish and chips place on Killingsworth called Halibut's. It's in a food truck.
Ooh,
phenomenal
nice.
Fish and chips.
That was mine and Jude Alexander's top five foods. I'm CJ, and that was my segment of the Food and Cooking Student Hour. Thanks for listening.
Toodles.
You're listening to the Student Hour, empowering the stories, conversations, and news from students in Portland and beyond.
Whether it's Halloween season or not,
everybody knows that there's only one part people actually care about, the candy. My name is Zara.
And my name is Wyatt, and you're listening to the Student Hour. This segment was first going to be about the best types of Halloween candies, but we couldn't agree on anything.
So instead, we're having a debate. Okay, so starting off with chocolate candy. My personal favorite is a Crunch Bar because it has the perfect texture.
Yeah.
And I hate the taste of nuts. Like, nuts are too healthy to go in chocolate. Why would you ever combine the two? So I think, like, the way that they use rice to provide the perfect crunch is amazing.
Oh, I didn't even know they used rice. I mean, I love Crunch Bars. Crunch Bars are, like, really, really good. I think they're, like, an A-tier candy. They're not S-tier.
A-tier.
I think they're A-tier candy. But, yeah, and I love nuts in candy bars. That's, like, one of the best things. Because it's like having, like, a little crunch in it when you're having that caramel and the chocolate. You want something else instead of just that chewy stuff. You have to have, like, a good crunch in the middle. Just, like, a good, like a Snickers bar with the peanuts or like 100 grand with like the other peanuts. Like, it's like, I think, or like an Almond Joy with the almond. Like, I feel like having nuts in it.
Almonds are better. I think the almond takes away from the joy. They should just call it an almond.
The almond takes away from the joy.
Yeah. They should just call it an almond. No joy. Because why would you try to make chocolate healthy? Like,
well,
you could just put something fun, crunchy. Like M&M's. You could put an M&M there.
It's not
making
it
almonds.
You're not making it healthy. You're just making having it like a little fun. Like, it's like a little crunch makes it. We're not like chocolate's already not healthy. Why would you try to make it healthy?
But there's funner ways to make it healthy. Like, you could add like M&M's, right? There's no nuts in M&M's. And peanut M&M's are terrible.
What?
Yeah.
That's the best of.
The caramel M&M's are the best M&M's. Peanut M&M's are like M&M's but worse.
No. The caramel M&M's are way too filling. There's like a bunch of chocolate and there's a lot of caramel. It's like it's a lot. It's too filling. And the peanut M&M, the peanut's kind of like airy a little bit, so it's like when you eat it, you get like that good crunchy peanut. And also, it's not like the artificial peanut butter ones, like in the peanut butter.
But why would you waste all that space when you could have put chocolate in on a peanut? Peanuts never taste better than chocolate. They never have, unless the chocolate's like from a dumpster or something.
Well, no.
It will never taste better.
I feel like peanuts and chocolate are like one of the best things ever to ever come together.
Really?
Yes. I mean...
But rice and chocolate.
I mean... That, but yeah,
it provides a good crunch.
Yeah, but yeah, but that's only one candy bar. That's only one candy bar.
And?
Yeah, so it's not that popular. So I guess not that many people like it if it's not that popular.
Because people don't know how smart of an idea it is. It's probably easier to just put nuts in it. But then it tastes better.
Yeah, but you're talking to like multi-billion-dollar corporations that do, and you think they'll do easy?
You think
easy?
Multi-billionaire corporations are good?
No. But I'm saying, like, do you think the multi-billion-dollar corporations are gonna go the easy route?
Yeah.
Or the
I think they are.
Yeah, which is adding nuts.
But that doesn't mean it tastes better. The easier route is not always the better route.
Yeah, but also, but I mean, I think in this sense, I think it does taste better.
Really?
Yes. That's what I've been saying.
But the thing is, why would you waste all that beautiful, beautiful space that could have been filled with chocolate or something good on something that tastes bad?
Wait, so do you not like peanuts, like, by themselves?
I don't like peanuts by themselves.
What's the point of having this, like, debate if you don't like peanuts? Like, if you don't like peanuts, of course you're not going to like peanuts and chocolate or peanuts and tomato sauce. Like, of course you're not going to like that because there's peanuts in it.
But so there's a lot of things. A lot of people dislike peanuts.
If you like peanuts and you said peanuts and chocolate weren't good, then I would like listen to you more. But if you just don't like peanuts, then what's the point? I mean, of course you're not gonna like peanuts and chocolate if it doesn't like.
I think peanuts can be good in some context. Chocolate is not one of them. The thing is, if you go to like Costco and you get those giant things of like honey roasted nuts, you're not just gonna eat honey by itself. And you're not just going to eat the nuts by themselves because that's boring.
No,
you can get chocolate. And you're going to enjoy that chocolate if you get it by yourself.
Every single dad that I know eats nuts by themselves.
And they're old.
Yeah,
they made more mistakes in their lives.
Yeah, but they have also...
They're prone to senile.
But they've also accomplished more in their life. They may have made more mistakes, but they've accomplished more.
Okay, but the mistake to accomplishment ratio is still not good.
I don't think so.
They're going senile. They're old.
Yeah,
nothing's but... Nothing's falling out. I don't trust any bald people. Back to candy. Okay, I feel like we've exhausted the idea.
So we've done the chocolate part. Now let's move on to the hard candy, or like the not like the savory caramel chocolate. Let's do like the artificial like sugar stuff like that.
Oh, that's sugar.
Okay,
stuff?
So what is your favorite like hard candy?
Sour Patch Kids.
Sour Patch Kids?
I think it's the perfect mix.
It's the most average candy.
And it's great.
The most average basic candy you can think of.
And?
But, like, I feel like you could do so much more. Like, I mean...
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it?
Yeah.
I feel like...
It ain't broke.
But I feel like they should add more sour stuff on it. I feel like...
Okay.
Right? Like you
Okay, I can agree with that. But I feel like it is so good that it doesn't need that more sour...
Wait, so what's your favorite Sour Patch... So what's your favorite Sour Patch Kit, like, the best flavor?
It changes. I like usually the red one. Sometimes it's the blue one, but it depends.
So you don't even know what kind of flavor it is? You're just like red, blue, orange, you don't?
Yeah.
So you're a Sour Patch Kid fan, but you don't know the actual flavors. Like,
because I think they can be respected for the colors they are.
My favorite is Jolly Ranchers.
Jolly Ranchers.
Yeah, Jolly Ranchers. Because it's like you have this like itty-bitty like hard candy, and you can suck on it for like hours and hours and hours. And you can...
But that doesn't mean it tastes good for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, but it's not like gum where like it loses its flavor. It has the same flavor until it's gone. Because it's...
Not necessarily. Like, but don't you get bored of that flavor after you've been having that same thing in your mouth for like an hour?
Well, it's not an hour. It's more like 5 minutes or like 10 minutes or something.
Exactly. So your argument for it lasting hours or a really long time doesn't really work.
I mean, I love the taste, so I love it being in my mouth for 10 minutes.
But the other thing is, you can't really chew it. Like, you're not supposed to chew it. Like, I chew my Jolly Ranchers.
That's sweet. Okay, guys.
It's like eating gum. It's like...
No, guys. So, who chews Jolly Ranchers? That is the most weird
thing.
And I'm a genius. No one chews Jolly Ranchers. No one chews
it. I just eat the wrappers, and I turn out fine.
Because the whole point of having Jolly Ranchers is that you can, like... Put it in your mouth and let it stir. So that means you won't, like, keep on snacking. You'll just have that one in, and you can, like... Suck on it. But if you just chew it, that'll probably hurt your teeth. You're probably like...
My teeth are amazing, so never.
Have you had any cavities?
Never.
In my life? I've had like one cavity.
The Jolly Ranchers. They're telling you.
I don't know.
Stop.
But do you like candy corn?
It depends. Because some candy corn brands just taste like chalk, but other ones taste like heavenly. You really need to get the right candy corn to make it happen.
I mean, I absolutely love candy corn. I think it's one of the best candy, like S tier candy. Like, I think it's really good. But just like you said, I feel like I wouldn't have it in like February or something. I wouldn't like have it in like if it wasn't like a Halloween kind of vibe.
But the thing is, if a candy's good, you should be able to have it year round and still enjoy it.
Well, yeah, I do, but I feel like they don't really sell it that much. Like you don't like store
it.
Yeah, but you really got to go on like a really like get like have to go to Walmart and go to the biggest candy aisle you can find. Also, there's no Walmarts around Portland.
Okay, it's kind of weird. Hear me out. The best time to get candy corn is in December.
During Halloween.
No, it's during December because that's when it's on sale.
Yeah, because they're all like
candy corn.
Because they're all stale.
And it adds to the flavor.
No,
real candy corn believers and real candy corn fanatics will get it. Will still enjoy it when it's stale.
No, but it's like saying like, oh yeah, I love milk, and when it goes bad, I still drink it.
Who
because
loves milk?
Because, what do you mean who loves milk? I mean, okay, that was a bad example, but like bread, like, okay, that's not a great example, but imagine you like love bread.
Okay.
And then when bread gets moldy, you're like, well, I still love it, so I'll keep on eating.
That's different because when candy corn gets stale, it doesn't get unhealthy. When bread gets stale, it's an actual hazard. Candy corn's never a hazard unless you're like a toddler and you choke on it.
Unless the candy corn's like 50 years old, then. Okay. I mean, maybe that
ever expires, honestly.
Yeah.
The stuff they're putting in it these days.
Yeah.
Like a Twinkie.
Thank you for listening to our debate. Let us know who you think won.
It was me. My name is Zara.
My name is Wyatt.
And you're listening to the Student Hour. Student Radio for the City of Portland and beyond.
Have you ever wondered what the best recipe in the world is? Hello, I'm Jude Alexander, and for my segment of the Student Hour, I'm here to talk to you about an awesome tofu taco recipe. This recipe was first created by Toby Alves, founder of Toby's Family Foods. You might know them for their tofu pate or their salad dressings. Toby was looking for a way to make healthy foods that still tasted good, and she found that in tofu. Tofu was first created in China, somewhere around 2,000 years ago. It gained popularity in the 1960s and 70s in Western cooking as a tasty meat substitute. This is the main reason why Toby used tofu. It's a healthy meat replacement that can also often taste better than the meat. Eugene, the birthplace of the tofutias, has had a large history with hippies and health food. Around 3 to 4 decades ago, Toby set up her taco stand, called Toby's Tofu Castle, at the Saturday Market in Eugene, Oregon. On that day, my mother was walking through the market with her family. She saw the taco stand at its usual corner and decided that today she was going to try one of the tacos. She was so amazed by the wonderful flavors that she asked her mother to try making them at home. Both of them worked to create an even better, tweaked version of the recipe that was somehow more wonderful than the original. Fast forward to today, and my family still eats tofutias almost every week. I'm not here to tell you long stories, though. I'm here to give you an awesome taco recipe. To make the tofu, the most important part of the dish, you need to dice it into about 1/2 inch by 1/2 inch cubes. Then you put it into a pan, preferably cast iron, and saute it until it reaches a golden brown state. After that, you add the secret ingredient, the thing that makes these tacos so legendary. It's a special mix of spices and herbs. I won't be too specific, but the mix contains nutritional yeast, onion powder, garlic powder, chili powder, and turmeric. You should mix in a decent amount of the special mix and then let it seep into the tofu. After that, pour some soy sauce on top, but make sure not too much, it could get very salty. After that, turn off the heat and let it sizzle. While you make the tofu, be sure to be stirring the whole time so that the tofu doesn't stick. The tofu isn't the only thing that makes these tacos amazing, though. My personal favorite is to add chopped cucumber and avocado, as well as a dollop of sour cream. It doesn't stop there. You could also add lettuce, salsa, guacamole, or even mango, which can definitely be a real treat. The tofu is also excellent for leftovers. You could put it in a quesadilla, a burrito, a salad, or maybe even use it for more tacos. This recipe is very important to me, and it represents a time when my mother and her brother got to bond over something as simple and wonderful as food. It's always lovely to create special moments with someone, and it's even more special if it's done over an amazing recipe. Tofutias have been my favorite food for as long as I can remember. My mom first made them for me what must have been somewhere around 13 years ago. And since then, this recipe has remained the best food in the world, although that is technically subjective. The recipe that Toby created is still out in the world, and it is still being enjoyed by many people today and many more to come. This concludes my segment. I'm Jude Alexander. You're listening to the Student Hour on KVPS. Toodaloo.
Please support the Student Hour and our affiliates. Visit their websites, sign up to volunteer, donate, and spread the word about the Student Hour. Thanks!
Nothing ruins your taco salad recipe like soggy chips, gooey lettuce, reheated in a microwave 2 days later. Yuck. But who doesn't love a good taco, or a good burrito, or some good nachos, or an awesome variation on a delicious taco salad. My name is Jacob Patterson, and I'm going to tell you a little secret to making your taco salad recipes the best that they can be on this episode of the Student Hour. Today's episode is about food and cooking. And the first thing that comes to mind is a family recipe from my grandma Ruth that's been passed down for generations of the Patterson family. And I've added my own variations and adjustments to it. We basically call it taco salad or Mexican salad, but there's certain ways to do it and certain ways to serve it that is just going to make it perfect for you. In this basic recipe, obviously you can make adjustments. You can add some things or subtract some things to make it your own. And that's one of the best things about cooking. You know, it's an experiment. You have an opportunity to take something really awesome and make your own variation on it. So let's just start with the basics. We come from a family that eats a little bit of meat for protein. So you could cook up a little bit of chicken or a little bit of ground beef or maybe some sausage, chorizo for a meat protein. I would just grill it in a cast iron skillet, a little bit of oil so it doesn't stick to the cast iron. And, you know, the various seasonings that you would use, you can use a generic taco seasoning that would work just fine. Make sure you cook your meat thoroughly, and you can use a meat thermometer to verify that it is thoroughly cooked so that nobody is eating raw meat and getting sick. Then we add in some chili beans. You get those right out of a can at your grocery supermarket to keep things easy. Pinto beans and chili sauce. But specifically, I'm not looking for any chili product. I'm looking specifically for beans, like a pinto bean in a chili sauce or even chili beans. They can be high in sodium, so you might want to find the low sodium variation to stay on the healthy side. I'll crack open a couple cans of those beans and dump them right into the large cast iron skillet where we just cooked the meat. Of course, you might want to drain the excess fat and excess oil off the meat before you do that. And then I fill up one of the cans with a little bit of water, enough so I can swish the juice out of the can into the recipe. And I do that with both cans. No delicious sauce left behind. Put that in your mix. Add enough water so that I can heat it to boiling and then put it down to a low simmer. And then I kind of let that cook and I move on to preparing the rest of the meal. Grandma Ruth always used a head of iceberg lettuce. Wash it, dry it, and mince it up into diced pieces. Of course, any salad you want to use, any type of lettuce you want to use would be fine. We often use a romaine. A few heads, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 heads of romaine lettuce will work just fine. If you have a salad spinner where you can dry the lettuce after you wash it and cut it, that is recommended. In fact, I recommend you get a salad spinner if you don't have one. You can find one at a store or even find a nice used one in great condition and wash it up from a garage sale. That's where I got mine. Once you got your lettuce cut up and set aside, then we need to dice up one full onion, a couple tomatoes, and maybe a little bell pepper if you want to add that in the mix as well. And I set those diced veggies aside. By this time, your meat and beans mixture should be at a low simmer and you keep it stirred so it's not sticking to your pan or anything like that. We take a bag of tortilla chips and open just one little tiny corner of the bag of chips and then actually crunch the chips up into kind of little bite-sized chunks so that they're kind of like bite-sized chips. You don't really open the bag. You keep the bag closed. Just open it enough so you can crunch up the chips a little bit. Here comes the secret part of the recipe. The way that Grandma Ruth used to make it, she'd get a big pot that you could put all of this stuff in, and she would layer it in a very specific order. She'd lay down the lettuce on the bottom first, and then onions, the diced onions, and some diced tomatoes, and then the layer of the crunched chips and cheese. Did I forget to mention we need to shred some cheese? You can use pre-shredded cheese or get yourself a block of cheddar cheese and shred that. Quick shout out to the local company Tillamook. Tillamook medium cheddar cheese is a cheese that you could use for this. Layer your shredded cheese on top of the chips. So you got lettuce, veggies like onions and tomatoes, chips, cheese on the very top. And then she would take the like boiling hot meat and beans mixture, layer that on the top of the cheese, and put a lid over that and let that melt the cheese for a minute, maybe 2 minutes. Get yourself a big spoon and stir the whole thing up and serve it out. If you're feeding a lot of people all at once at a big party, that's the way to do it. It's hot, it's fresh, and you want to eat it right then when it's ready, when it's nice and hot and fresh. Now, the one change that I've made to this over the years is that I don't make the mixture all in the one big giant bowl anymore. I keep those individual ingredients separate and separated, laid out on the counter. And then the person just grabs whatever they want in a smaller portion in a smaller bowl and mixes up their own individual portion. And if you keep the ingredients separate, that keeps your chips nice and crisp until you're ready to eat it. And you can always heat up just the beans and meat and cheese mixture the next day in the microwave and still have fresh, crisp lettuce and fresh chips that are crunchy anytime you go to eat this awesome meal. Of course, you could always top it off with a little bit of sauce, little taco sauce, or a little sour cream. And if you're like me and you're trying to stay healthy and watch your weight, plain non-fat Greek yogurt is a phenomenal substitute for sour cream. It literally tastes the same, looks the same, and is 100% fat-free and so much more healthy for you. You gotta try that plain, fat-free Greek yogurt as a substitute for your sour cream. Little guac is good in the mix as well. You can season it and add to your taste as you'd like. But the next time you're making a taco salad or a Mexican salad, or maybe even ordering the Cinco de Mayo pizza from your local pizza shop, tell them you want the veggies on the side. And keep those ingredients separate until the very second you go to eat it. Everything stays nice and fresh. You can reheat it the next day or two or 3 days later, and it still is awesome. So, Grandma Ruth, I sure hope you don't mind me sharing a little bit of that recipe with everybody. And I hope that you like my new idea on how to serve it so that the chips and everything just stay nice and fresh and crisp anytime you go to eat it. Again, my name is Jacob Patterson. I'm the KBPS radio broadcasting instructor here at Benson Polytechnic High School, sharing a little bit of the Patterson family recipe for Mexican salad, taco salad with you on this episode of Delicious Food and Cooking on the Student Hour. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Student Hour, amplifying student voices from the city of Portland and beyond. The Student Hour is produced by KBPS broadcasting students at Benson Tech. On air since 1923, KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Thanks to our supporters, partners, and listeners like you. Full episodes of The Student Hour are available online at kbps.am.